G'day and welcome to Macca's Podcast. I love the scope of our program, anything and everything. If you want to get in touch with Australia, this is the place to do it. Settle back and join the Australian phone box. See you on the road.
Get on with it, Macca.
G'day, this is Macca.
Hi Macca, it's Ron Fenimore. Just driving along, listening to you this morning. You reckon everybody's still in bed? Well, they're not. They're up.
I saw one of your trucks the other day. It was white. Well, somebody wrote to me and said it was a white truck. I saw a Finnamore truck and it was white. And I'd seen one too because I was coming back from wherever I was. So what's the deal, Ron?
Oh, the white trucks are ones that are work exclusively for Woolworths.
Oh, I see.
That's part of the contract that they've got to be that way. But beautiful morning this morning. I've got the red sky and a windmills are between Gunning and Goulburn, driving back to Sydney from Wagga, and it's a beautiful morning, and you were talking about nobody ringing you up because they're all still in bed. I tell you what I did do, I love the introductory song today. You've got to play that every time.
Down on some Australian coast?
First song.
Oh, the first song? The little...
The
one written by, what's his name? Was it Ian? Ian Timmins, yeah. It's a good little song, isn't it?
Bloody good. Who sang it?
We don't know. it was written by a bloke called Ian Timmins, I'm pretty sure. And, he sent it in, and it's an AI song. It's he put his song into an AI, which is like ChatGPT, and it turns out a little song, and that was the song came out. But I think every time I played it to some people around here at work, and they were the same. They love it.
Yeah, I thought it was bloody good. It's a beautiful morning, red sky in the morning, shepherd's morning, so it might get some rain. But been to Albury yesterday to Max Luff's memorial service, and parked one of our trucks in a park and lay asleep. So.
Yeah. So, Ron, how's business going? Good?
Yeah, look, business for everybody's tough, Australia especially today, but we've got a great crew of people and they do a fantastic job in every way, and we're very lucky to have good people and good customers and live in Australia, mate.
Oh, yeah. I think more and more people should realise that, I think, too, but I don't know how you... I don't know how you make them realise that, but, you know, you don't want... as I said, I was just talking about Banjo Paterson, and you can't look back all the time, but it's important to look back, and Banjo Paterson, you know, after all, wrote, you know, the Snowy River, and when we had our Olympics, that's what we did. We used Banjo Paterson's poem as part of the thing to say, well, look, this is not all about us, but it's part of us, and you don't want to forget that.
It's good to have memories and listen and remember the good and the bad. And, as you get older, you reflect and you know that. But we're all getting older. And, it's good. Your show's fantastic. And I think what you do about bringing people together from around Australia, around the world, having something, some sort of story is fantastic.
It's pretty important. I read something the other day, or I heard something about some... AI and people, because people are lonely and they're, you know, on their own and stuff like that, and they've got no one to talk to, they connect with AI. They have conversations with AI, and that's their only connection with the world, which is pretty sad. So I think a program like this, that's what I think people like. But they hear other Australians ringing up and talking about whatever, such as yourself, or doing whatever they're doing, and I think that's important too. But it's we're all connected, and yet we're disconnected in a great way.
Yep. Well, it's probably not enough people get out of bed at this time of morning. They're probably still getting home from partying last night or something. But you probably don't want to hear from them. But
my mate, the beekeeper, says, Macca, the day's buggered. If you don't get up at 5 o'clock, those people who get up at 8 o'clock, the day's buggered. You've got to get up at 5 o'clock. So he's probably right, but I'm not sure every day. But yeah, he gets up at 5 o'clock every morning. So there you go.
Well, I get up a bit earlier than that every day and have most of my life. But some people are morning people, some people are night people, and that's how we're made, and that's what suits us, that pleases us. Well, that's what we should do.
I hope I bumped into you soon, Ron. Good on you, mate. Thanks for your call.
Good on you. Have a great day.
See you, mate. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Good morning, Macca. It's Robin from Boronia here.
Hi, Rob.
How are you?
Yeah, good.
Good. Just ringing up to recognise all the work that the four-wheel drive clubs are doing in the fire recovery around Fawcett and Yark.
Mm.
The Four-Wheel Drive Association has been organising members from different clubs to go out and help farmers rebuild or just clean up after the terrible fires that we've had around the area.
Yeah, I'm, that happens every time there's a fire or even flood, but especially around fires, that happens all the time with the four-wheel drive clubs, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And yes, going back to all the floods and helping out there, they do an absolutely fantastic job. And I don't think enough people know that the four-wheel drive clubs do get out there and put a lot of work in. So yeah. Just wanted to let you know.
You're in one of those clubs, Robin?
Yes, I am. I'm actually the secretary of the Four-Wheel Drive Association, but I'm secretary of the Pajero Club in Victoria.
Uh-huh. And you're up and about this morning?
I am. Lardner Park has got a big four-wheel drive show on this weekend, so I'm heading off to there to help out.
Yeah, and the fires in Yark and Fawcett, did you say Fawcett?
Yes. Our club has been out there in Fawcett helping all the farmers and hearing some really sad stories about what has happened to them. So we send them all our love and we'll be up there to help.
Yeah, there's been a lot of damage. There's been a huge amount of damage. I heard from Blazade yesterday, which I'll read a little later. But, yeah, a lot of work to be done,
Yes, yeah, Blazade gets a lot of, people know about Blazade, but they don't seem to know that our four-wheel drive club members get out there and do a lot of work as well.
Yeah, and how do they organise? How's that organised?
We have people in our clubs, all the different clubs that are leaders, trip leaders, and they organise a trip via the emails, and the members just make themselves available.
Well, that's good. Good on them. I've heard that many times with the four-wheel drive clubs, and they're able to do it because they've got the vehicles to do it, Rob.
They do, and they've got the equipment if they need any heavy,
winches and all that sort of stuff.
Yes, that's right. Yes, yeah, and chainsaws, which they did a lot of that last weekend. They had to remove a lot of trees.
Are you dry down your way?
Yes, we are very, very dry.
It's amazing, isn't it? Look around. Queensland's getting inundated. Southern Queensland inundated. The monsoon's still going on. There's drought and there's been fires. It's just one of those summers we have in Australia, Rob.
Yes, and I heard on the news the other day that Victoria is having 30% less rainfall in the last year and it's going to get worse. So doesn't
look good for us. No. Good on you, Rob.
Okay, thank you very much.
See ya. Bye. G'day. Where are you, Jim?
Oh, g'day, Macca. It's Jim from Gundagai.
Oh, Jimmy, how are you, mate?
Yep, good, mate. Yeah, good.
What's happening?
Well, yesterday we had the main day of the Gundagai Royal Show. In Gundagai.
Yeah.
Massive day there. It was a wonderful day weather-wise. And the committee on the Gundagai show is unreal. They run a massive program there. They have dog trials, they have sheep dog trials and cattle dog trials.
We should have been there, Jimmy. We should have been there. Did you do any whip cracking?
No whip cracking, mate. I was sent to the kids' fun ring for the day to judge some of the events there and do the time trial things. Yeah, it was a big day for the little kids and the parents leading them around. It was a good day. Yeah,
I love the local show. Gundagai sounds like it was a ripper. It was just one day show or 2 days?
It's a 2 day show. They have Friday. Friday was the free admission day where they sort of get things rolling, and there was horse events and show jumping and stuff like that. And then the Saturday is the big day where they fire up all the sideshows and the wood chopping and it's a massive show. They've got a really good committee there that all work together, and bloody it's one of the best country shows I've ever been to. Yeah,
it's an iconic place, isn't it? Gundagai. The name Gundagai is just redolent of Australia, I reckon, mate.
Absolutely. Yeah. The highlight of the show for us was Catherine. Catherine put first time ever, she's put a sponge cake in the show, and she cleaned up, mate.
Well, tell her the cake. Does she get the cake back? What happens with the cake?
Well, we got the cake back, but because it had been sitting in the bouillon for a couple of days, it was a little bit. Sponge cakes don't like that sort of treatment. Yeah.
Jimmy, I've got a fly. Great to talk to you, mate.
No worries, mate.
Congratulations to Catherine. See you, mate.
Good on you, mate. Thank you.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Oh, g'day, Macca. It's Andrew here. I've spoken to you a few times over the years, but I sent some pictures through to Kelly by email about Australian beef in Japan being cheaper than it is in my local supermarket after your discussion of last week of how expensive things were.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, Australian beef is shipped halfway around the world, and then they put a 25% tax on it in Japan, and yet it's cheaper there than it is back in my local supermarket.
Well, as they say in the modern argot, go figure. I don't know how that can be, mate. Have you got any insight?
Well, lack of competition. We've basically only got two supermarkets here, whereas Japan's got, you know, four majors, 10 minors, plus dozens of regional supermarkets, and they compete on price. If you look at Australia's supermarkets with beef, 10 of the key 20 items are identically priced in Coles as they are in Woolworths. Now, go figure.
as they say. And you've been in Japan and tasted the beef? Any good?
Well, I lived there for 15 years, Macca. I used to call you from Japan from time to time. And I remember we had an issue with the bears. You know, I was wandering around and I saw some bears. And the following week, a local was attacked by a bear. So, you know, lots of... but I think the last time I spoke to you, I was at the 75th anniversary of the Battle of El Alamein, where... Peter Cosgrove was the ranking diplomat and keynote speaker. That would have been 2017.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Anyway. Look, I visit Japan quite frequently, and, Australian beef is cheaper there. There's lots of things that are cheaper there. For instance, you can get a nice handmade sandwich and a handmade coffee cheaper than going down to Coles Express or Ready Express, where you have to make your own coffee, and the sandwich is pre-made and packaged and brought in. So, like you say, go figure. Competition.
Yeah, well, I suppose so, but you might have heard the call last week from where the bloke said they were in America, and they said they were going out for the day with the family, and they said I said, you've left the air conditioning on. He said, oh, don't worry, we leave it on all the time. It only costs us $30 a month for electricity.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah.
I don't know. We are the dearest probably around the world, and certainly the big cities like Sydney and Melbourne especially, it's horrendously expensive, I find.
For certain things, yes, it is. I mean, Japan used to be the most expensive place for beef and rural produce, but now they're putting stuff to their consumers cheaper than our supermarkets can put Australian product on the shelf for. It just doesn't make sense. But it's competition, lack of competition.
Yeah, and you still go, you used to live there, you still go back. Why? What do you do?
I work for a company that imports some products out of France into Japan. I spent a long time in the meat industry up in Japan, but I'm sort of semi-retired now, and I just do a few jobs here and there for people that are putting product into Japan.
It's the go-to place, isn't it, Japan? Everybody talks when you speak to people who are travellers. I'm not a traveller, but they say, oh, yeah, we're going to Japan, or they want to go to Japan. It's getting loved to death in lots of ways, Japan, because everyone wants to go there.
Well, it is, and I've skied Japan for 35 years. When I first skied Japan, there was I actually worked in Japan for 3 years in the late 80s. And when I first went there, there was no English. Now you go there, there's English, Chinese and Korean. When I first went there, first went skiing, you would never hear an English voice on the mountain. Now you hardly hear a Japanese voice on the mountain. So, big changes.
Big change.
But it's still cheaper to go to Japan and ski than it is to... I bought a five-day ticket in Japan for cheaper than I bought a single-day ticket in Treadbow or Perisher. So you can have 5 days skiing over there for what it costs you for 1 day skiing here. It's great.
Andrew, let's go to Japan. I think I'd like to go. The reason I'd like to go, because our friends used to come in here, Janet Seidel and Chuck, and they used to go there, and they said there was lots of ukulele clubs. Ukulele was very big in Japan or in Tokyo. I'm not sure because I haven't been there, but that sounds like fun.
Well, yeah, there's quite a few good jazz clubs around that feature ukuleles and other. But, yeah, jazz is great in Japan too. So, I like Japan. I very much enjoy it. And I skied earlier this year in Japan and had a good time with my daughter. It's a wonderful place, but where it used to be the dearest is now one of the cheapest places to go.
And they've got a go-to prime minister now who's shaking things up as well.
Yeah, she's shaking things up, isn't she?
I'll say. And they play rugby. Yeah. They play rugby. I don't know why they don't get those big sumo wrestlers to play, you know, to be prop forwards for their rugby clubs, because they're big fellas.
They are big. I don't know that they'd move very quickly, though.
No, they don't have to, really. they just get in the scrum and they just run over everyone. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
Listen, Macca, I'd love you to play Gumtree Canoe. I love his voice.
Uh-huh. Yep. Well, I'll find it for you in a minute. It's here somewhere under a pile of CDs. We still have CDs here, Andrew. That's how. But I was talking to a bloke the other day about CDs and vinyl, and you know they say that CDs have gone out, but vinyl's making a comeback. But yet he believes that more people are buying CDs and using CDs than they are vinyl. He says people, they produce vinyl, but people just give them out as promotional things and give them to their friends and stuff like that. But CDs are still making a comeback, he says. Anyway, I just thought I'd tell you that, Andrew. Well, I'll try and find Gumtree Canoe.
Yes. Wonderful. Thanks for your show, Macca.
It's a pleasure, mate. Good on you. See ya.
See you, bye.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Macca, it's Mark Campbell speaking.
How are you, Mark?
I'm really good, mate. I'm fine. I'm excellent.
That's the way. What are you up to?
I'm sitting at above Wanda Surf Club looking out at the surf boats warming up for the ASRL, which is the Surf Rowers League Championship Finals today.
Oh, right. And where are they? Where are the finalists from?
Oh, everywhere. No, down to about the last 12 or 16 crews in most of the divisions. They've come from all over the country. There's Western Australians, South Australians, Queenslanders by the dozen. So it's pretty competitive, I've got to tell you. It's brutal competition. We had the Masters on Thursday, and even in that, there were some crews from all over the country. Today, for men's, I'd say Bull Eye and anybody else, it would be the only crews I'd put some money on would be Bull Eye, but it's very, very tight. And if the wave comes from the wrong direction, you go from fourth to first or first to fourth in a very short time.
Mark, are you rowing?
I rowed on Thursday in the Masters, so we've had the main event, we call it. So, and yesterday they had the Trans-Tasman, which was just fantastic. It's New Zealand. The ASRL does a wonderful job of promoting the sport all around the world, and especially in this country, they're just great people, all volunteers. And so we had a New Zealand under 23 and under an open men's and women's crews, and same for Australia. And Australia got up, but especially in the opens, it was very, very tight. And my boys rode in the under 23 crew, second year they managed to make the team, and had a great day with their mates from South Girl Girls. So, and the Palm Beach girls won the under 23 women. In the opens, the men won 3-0, but they were tight racing. The last one was a 6-inch margin. So, and the women lost one race. It was 2-1 to the Australians. So, we got the trophies and had a great day. But really amazing camaraderie too. They're just all very close friends between the two teams.
It's nice. Is there a bit of weather about? Is it a bit rough and woolly out there?
It was on Thursday. It was phenomenally windy. I don't think I've ever rode in windier conditions, but the surf wasn't too big. Friday was pretty big, choppy. Yesterday morning was pretty choppy as well. It's now just drizzly and not much wind, and it'll probably be much fairer racing today. So probably the best crews probably will win today, but boy, it's been some tough competition up until now.
Yeah, well, that's good. It's always great to see. It's a tough thing in a boat, especially when the surf gets big and you bang around and stuff. It's no place for the faint-hearted in a surf boat, is it?
No, it's what I would say about it is it's just phenomenally exciting because you really race in the ocean, not the people around you, and that's what sort of binds everyone together. I just love it. I don't care if we win, lose, or draw, to be honest. But we had a good day on Thursday, but. I just love the excitement of going out against the ocean, you know, and occasionally you get a win and occasionally you don't. So it's, especially when it's like that choppy, you know, tough conditions, it's exciting. And they're pretty good on safety now. No one goes out if it's really dangerous anymore. I think those days of being heroic and going out 10-foot surfer are probably done. Yeah.
We had, I don't know if you heard last week, we had three blokes who were sea kayaking Bass Strait, and they went across from Victoria, and they were they ended up near Flinders Island, so they were nearly finished, but the weather gods were with them. So, but again, Bass Strait in bad, you know, in anything, but especially in
that's ferociously dangerous over there. I'm sure they had a support boat. I didn't hear that bit, but I did hear the bloke talking about honey. And one of my clients, Winston, is a fantastic guy, came in during the week, and I thought this would be some good news for you and listeners. He said they're now harvesting, because all the wild bees are dead, sadly, but all the wild, the native bees are still there. But the wild, the European bee hives are all gone. And they have to take care of their bees. They use oxalic acid and something else, he told me. But they are now harvesting once a month instead of once a year because the bees have no competition. If you take care of your own, of your beehives, they seem to be doing really well out of it. It was pretty surprising news for me, but he said they're actually doing really well. I have to take care of them, but, you know, that's it.
Mark, great to talk to you, mate. I wish you a nice place to be on Wanda Beach or any beach, especially when people are doing, competing in surf. But it's a great Australian sport, isn't it? It's wonderful.
It is a great sport. The whole village that sort of springs up on the beach with all the colourful tents, and just one day there's nothing, and then there's 4 days of like a whole village, and then
And to talk, I'd love to be talking to people from all over. That's what I love about going to the Surf Life Saving Carnivals, when it's the Australian Champs, wherever it is, and you talk to people from all over the place, and it's just wonderful. And they're all sorts of other, like vets and all sorts of people you can talk to, but their real passion is rowing. Rowing.
And their other passion is Macca, I can tell you right now, mate. There's a lot of support here for you.
Good on you, Mark.
Right on, mate.
See you, mate. Bye.
This is the All Over News.
This is the All Over News, and we've had a summer, haven't we? We've had drought in places, we've had floods and flooding rain in places still going on now, and we've had bushfires. This is from Paul, and he's marked it deja vu Cobago fires. Cobago had a really bad fire in 2019, but they've had other ones. And he says, Macca, you may not be aware that the Wandella, Yarri and Cobago areas were recently threatened by fire again after a lightning strike in the Wadbelliga National Park around Wednesday, the 7th of January, early January. This is my personal account. It looked like it was going to be deja vu for the Wandella, Yarri and Cobago areas with a brass knocker fire trail, good name, the brass knocker fire trail fire in the Wadbelliga National Park burning at 2,400 hectares and then growing to 3,500 hectares to the west of the localities of the town at around 3 p.m. with 38 degrees and a northwesterly. It did what they call run up the back of the peak. Luckily by 5, the wind shifted around towards the east, which slowed the fire's progress, dropping the air temperature to 24 degrees. Many of the sounds and smells that I experienced over that period from Saturday to Tuesday took me straight back to December the 30th, 2019, and the hellfire we experienced and my subsequent thoughts of, one, what has the Royal Commission done for us in reducing fuel loads? Two, has anyone in authority learned anything? And three, memories of our forefathers saying, burn the bush or be burnt. The other thing we've noticed since the 2019 fire is how the home insurance varies, depending on what locality you live in. I've heard of premiums in the range of $8,000 just for the house on the farm in the locality of Yarri. And if you change your address to another locality 5 km back towards town using the same house information, the premium halves. My question is, how do we get the relevant authorities to acknowledge the fuel loads in national parks, state forests, roadsides and road reserves and reduce these fuel loads? Without the help of the media in putting a spotlight on the problem, I don't think anything will happen. An increased risk of fire will just get worse. Apparently, the rural fire services have been recommending hazard reduction burns, but it appears these fall on deaf ears. When I was a child, says Paul, the farmers in the summertime used to push their cattle up into these areas where the properties adjoined what are now national parks and state forests, grazing the forest floor. At the end of summer, going into autumn, they would go in on horseback, bring the cattle back out while dragging a burning sugar bag on a rope behind them and performing what is called a cold, slow burn, allowing any animals to move off in front of the fire and the fire not being so hot that it gets into the canopy and kills the trees. Thus, reducing the fuel load for the next summer at no cost. The way I see it, aren't we better off reducing the severity of bushfires by reducing the fuel load? I'm sure people that have lost everything to fire would agree, says Paul. This is the All Over News, and you see lots of ads on TV for buying Australian. Jeremy says, Macca, as a high school economics student in the 70s, I could see the writing on the wall way back then that Australia's demand for higher wages was going to be its undoing. This was really driven home with the demise of the car industry, along with all the allied manufacturers. Soon after COVID, with a new push towards Australian made, I needed to buy a set of chisels. There were the Chinese made, $50 to $100 bucks. I found some Aussie made ones in South Australia, $750, but I ended up with a German set, $280. Recently, you may recall the demise of the last maker of architectural glass. I do, because a bloke rang us that morning. He'd worked there. It died without a whimper, despite the cries of being self-reliant from the government after COVID. Given the cost of labour and materials, despite the fact we have the resources here, it's hard to see we'll make much here. Even tourist brochures are printed overseas. Thanks for your show, says Jeremy. Thank you, Jeremy. And off to French. Jane says, loved listening to the number one song Waltzing Matilda in French this morning. That's last week. Just thought I'd let you know French is still taught. My daughter lives in Darwin and is a French teacher. She taught French in a Melbourne girls' school for 10 years before moving to Darwin 5 years ago. She taught English for 4 years, but her passion is French. So she introduced French to a school in Darwin and the students love it. I bet they do. I know a young'un who wants to learn French, but there's no French at this. I think it's a great language. It sounds so good. It's all about the sound. Apart from it, it's quite easy. It's very English, a lot of French and English words, you know. I think it's great. It's bon, très bon. Thanks, Jane. This is the All Over News, and what we're going to do here is go back, right back. Years ago, 30 years ago, I had a letter from a listener which I passed on to Duncan Steele, Dr. Duncan Steele at the Anglo-Australian Observatory. He replied to this bloke, And he also sent me a copy. And I just found it the other day, as I said, I go through and there's this fantastic archive. Anyway, Duncan Steele was telling, it was about galaxies and stuff like this. I'll try and paraphrase it because it's most interesting what he says. And he was talking about galaxies. The man was asking about galaxies and Duncan Steele said, and this is 30 years ago, he says, galaxies are very far from our planetary system. The nearest galaxies to us are the large and the small Magellanic clouds, which are either 170,000 or 250,000 light years. Can you believe it? Light years. Now, I won't do it here, but you can work it out. Say, let's split the difference, say 200,000 light years, multiply 60 seconds by 60 minutes by 24 by 365, is that right? By 200,000 by 300,000, because that's the speed of light, and you get an idea of how far away they are. My God, these galaxies. The other thing that Duncan Steele said in this letter to a listener is that the stars that we see now in the sky move imperceptibly. They sweep across the sky every night, but they move imperceptibly. But if you come back in 10,000 years, they may not even be there. The bottom line, he says, that if you came back in 10,000 years, most of the bright stars you can see with the unaided eye, which tend to be the nearby stars, will have moved relative to each other. And therefore, the constellations will have changed so as to be unrecognizable in many cases. Now we come to another effect, he says, that of the Earth's spin axis. Each night, the stars appear to sweep across the sky due to the spin of the Earth, but they do not move relative to each other by any perceptible amount. However, over timescales of tens of thousands of years, there are a number of effects which alter the Earth's spin axis and also change its orbit slightly. For life on Earth, like ants and dogs and crocodiles and galahs, the major repercussion of this is that the climate is altered. One of the best supported ideas among scientists for the causes of ice ages is that these variations in the tilt and the orbit of our planet change the amount of sunlight and hence heat received at different latitudes. This is called the Milankovitch theory. However, for stargazers like Homo sapiens, such alterations also affect what you see in the sky. As the spin axis of the Earth moves, the points in the sky that we call poles move. Thus, the star Polaris, which is very close to the North Polar direction, would no longer be the pole star for people in the Northern Hemisphere. In the Southern Hemisphere, you do not have a pole star in the present epoch. But in the future, our descendants could indeed obtain one as the pole moves slowly across the sky. This also means, however, that the pointers, Alpha and Beta Centauri, that's the pointers in the Southern Cross, will no longer point towards the South Polar point in the sky, and the Southern Cross, if it still exists, that is, if those five stars have not jumbled themselves up into another pattern, will no longer move around the pole in the same way as they do now. So in 10,000 years, what he's saying is they may not be a Southern Cross. It may have all, it's all disintegrated. Oh, dear. Having written the above, says Dr. Duncan Steele, writing to one of our listeners 30 years ago, such effects will not be noticeable in our lifetimes, nor indeed those of our children or grandchildren, unless you happen to be an astronomer. For us, the very small movements of the stars are important and affect our measurements markedly, said Duncan Steele 30 years ago at the Anglo-Australian Observatory up in Coonabarabran. My guests this morning are Dr. Mark Joseph. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Yourself?
It's nice to see you. And Luke O'Shea, who's hot back from New Zealand. How is the land of the long white cloud, Mark?
It's stunningly beautiful, you know, and they still like to give us heaps. But, yeah. You know, it's beautiful over there, and the people over there are just remarkable, as is the country. And as you know, it's a place where you don't discuss the rugby lately.
Very true.
There's a World Cup on soon, isn't there?
There is. Yeah. There is, and they're primed, mate. It was a great education just watching their season kick off, actually.
Right. And they haven't done, I mean, they've done wonderfully well, but the last month or two, a year or so, they've been a bit up and down, haven't
they? That's right. Yeah, they're not feeling as confident as they once were, but that's a good thing.
Yeah. But rugby league's very popular over there too, isn't it?
Look, it is, but nothing will ever knock rugby union off its mantelpiece up there. It was just phenomenal. We sat in a little pub there as the Crusaders took on the Highlanders, and it was very electric, to say the least, down on the South Island.
Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. We'll talk to Dr. Mark about sharks and kids and all sorts of things, and we'll talk to you. Our number's 1300 700 222. You can put your headphones on if you want to listen. G'day, this is Macca.
put these on.
Hello.
Yeah, oh, g'day.
Macca, Jonathan Dixon.
Hi, Jonathan in Melbourne.
In Melbourne, Macca, yeah. Look, I just wanted, I don't want to sound a square, but I was just listening to you about these bikes. I've been riding motorbikes since I was 16 and I still ride a Ducati ST4 and I go out, put all my leathers on and I'm starting to look like an idiot because I'm on a busy road in Melbourne, which is Beach Road, and these young kids go past in between cars on their cycles, on these electric cycles, and it's just crazy. The way this has got out of hand. And if they only knew, when I first got this bike, a tradie, and I'm not against tradies, but he had a left blinker on and did a right turn, and I either T-boned him or I had to drop the bike. And if I hadn't have had leathers on, so I just think of these young kids. It's out of hand and something needs to be done.
Yeah, I just thought maybe it's because they're selling so many bikes that, they need to keep selling them or buying them. I don't know. It must be a lot of money because you see them everywhere. But I just remember when I first bought a bike and I knew that if I doubled somebody, I'd be pulled over by the cops because they always stopped you when you were young. And I was 18, yep. I think, and I had a license to ride the motorbike. But you got fined quite heavily for doubling somebody for the first year. And even after that, they'd pull you up because you're young and you're doubling someone and they'd think, here's a go and we'll get some money.
Now they're
these 14-year-old kids with 8-year-olds on the back and they seem to be doing about 40 k's an hour. They've got no license. They're riding on the footpath or they're riding on the road. And it's... You scratch your head and say, oh, maybe this is the new world, this is the world we live in, I don't know. Dr. Mark.
Well, I can't work it out because, as you say, in Church Street, about 2 months ago, four of them went up Church Street. This is a busy street in Brighton and all monoing. I thought I must be really behind times.
What do you call it?
Mono. They one wheel.
Oh, one wheel, yeah.
One wheel.
Yeah, that's the deal.
No helmets.
No.
And I thought the world's gone crazy.
No, it's like they're in a skate park or something, and they're on a road, and they're doing all this sort of stuff. I saw it about 4 weeks ago. This kid goes up the footpath. I'm out mowing the lawn, and there's a footpath on the other side of the road, and he was doing at least 40 or 50 up the footpath. Vroom. And he went up the school.
Totally.
Went up to the school, picked up his younger brother who was about, nine or something and doubled him back. But he was only doing about 30 when he came back. But, I mean, it's...
They just don't understand, Macca, because it can happen so quickly,
But why doesn't a Premier of New South Wales and Victoria go on the TV? This is what I think. When there's a problem, the boss should get up and say, hello, this is the story. This is what's happening. It can't happen. It will stop. We'll have to stop it. And because Dr. Mark's here this morning, Dr. Mark Joseph. Mark, what's the result of this in hospitals and things like that?
I think the A&E departments are awash with these injuries, especially older people. As you correctly said, these 12-year-olds in charge of a missile, they get onto the pathways and poor old people can't move quickly and they get some horrendous injuries of this. It's got to stop. I think in WA they're destroying the bikes now, aren't they?
I don't know. I hope so.
I think so, yeah. I think Chris Minns said he was going to have – I think they're thinking about that here.
And the other thing, I'm talking to Luke, going to talk to Luke O'Shea. Luke's a wonderful singer and songwriter, musician, and that's why he was in New Zealand. But this is the new mobile thing, isn't it, Luke? They can go anywhere and do anything.
It is, yeah. Well, my other gig is I've been an educator within high schools for about 30-odd years because the music industry is so lucrative in Australia.
I was just going to talk about that later. You go on.
But it's a heartbreaker because... We just got our hands tied because here's this new generation coming through that have had no fear put upon them in any way, shape or form. Like the restorative justice has come in, the corporal punishment's gone out. And we're
entitlements in.
Yeah, we're relating to them on a level where their maturity is just not at. And so something has to be done. Like it's a yin and yang because we also forget, baby boomer generation where, we're talking about e-bikes now, but you guys had V8 Tiranos with no seatbelts and, you show around and thought, oh, nothing's wrong here. But you survived that somehow. And this generation will survive it, but we do have to, education is key. And what breaks my heart, it's not just the e-bikes, you know. It was very close to the scenario where we had those two young gentlemen on the jet skis. You know, here's kids that are teenagers, you know, 14, 15, when you're not supposed to be bright. You know, your body's doubling in size, your blood's everywhere but your brain. And here we are giving them a $25,000 plus jet ski, and they haven't had the education on how to use it or think ahead to the dangers that await them.
Mm.
And that rational thinking only develops later in life, where you can program what the steps are for you flying up a driveway if a car pulls out or a person pulls out. You know, there's just no pre-thought, and that's just not hitting their brains as yet. So education is key, and until they've been educated, you don't give them the keys to a device which can cause serious harm.
Yeah, and we have bike lanes now, but I assume that bike lanes were invented for bikes and people. But now there's e-bikes going along bike lanes at 40 k's an hour, and you can't hear them.
Mm.
And I'm sure there's been I was talking to a parking police lady the other day, you know, yesterday, and she said she told me some stories about, because we were just standing near the bike lane and whoosh, they went past, and she said, oh, I've had a couple of people knocked down by e-bikes on bike lanes. And they weren't invented for e-bikes, but all of a sudden in the last, what, I don't know, 5-10 years, you've got e-bikes on them.
We do have to catch up, and that's the problem, is that we've incorporated this new technology, like computers, etc. It's the same thing. We've got these guinea pigs out there, and these kids in this generation have been the guinea pigs for all this new technology. And, mate, if I was that age, I'd want an e-bike too. Like, look at the fun. But you got to add to that the pressure of the parents needing to provide a $4,500 bike to their teenager because all their mates have got it.
When everyone's got one, like, and a mobile phone as well.
And I said that's an enormous pressure on a household, let alone trying to control what they do once they've got it. So exactly. It's magnified beyond just the dangerous risk. It's a massive pressure on the whole of society, really.
That's Luke. Jonathan, you're still there?
I am still here. I was just thinking, Dr. Mark, that is absolutely right about peer pressure, especially in the locality I'm in. They've all got to have them, but there's no education.
No.
On how to use them. And along our bike path on the beachfront, that's even worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are just getting mowed down. But I'm glad, Mackie, you brought it up because it is a real problem.
It certainly is. Jonathan, you're dry in Melbourne?
I am very dry. I'm looking out over a water ski Port Phillip Bay, and it's beautiful down here. But we need rain, Macca.
Yeah, I know. All right, Jonathan, great to talk to you, mate. I'll see you in Melbourne sometime, hopefully.
Definitely.
Macca. All right, bye. I'm talking this morning to Dr. Mark Joseph and Luke O'Shea. Luke's a musician. Dr. Mark is a doctor. And it's interesting, isn't it? I was going to talk about music, and you mentioned, Luke mentioned the fact that the money's gone out of music. I remember, and it's always been thus, but my dad was a trombone player, and he played in bands, big bands and stuff, in the days in the 50s and 60s when there was a lot of work around. And if he wasn't working in the big band, he was playing in the theatre, like the Theatre Royal or something, you know, so we 6 nights a week. But as well as that, he also used to do copying, so he'd do so always trying to get extra money. But now musicians, really, their main gig is not music, but it's doing something else like teaching or whatever. They either teach kids music or they teach in schools. They've got another gig because you've got to have it. Isn't that right, Luke?
It is true to a large extent. The country here is just so big, even though it's beautiful, etc. To get around it as a musician, it's a hard job.
Mm.
And it's you can do it, but you need to sacrifice a home life if that's the case. And so what you have to kind of weigh it up. What do you want to do, perpetually stay on that road or have a home life where you can actually provide and be home for your kids and give them some sort of security? And that's the yin and the yang of it. In Australia, if you want to kind of head off overseas where there's more of a larger population that will support the arts and maybe aren't as apathetic towards the arts as maybe a lot of Australians are, that's a choice you have to make. Mm. But, you know, we've won the lottery by being born in this country and being able to live here. So that's just part of the gig where you say, okay, well, I have to get something else that will provide me some level of security. And you know, we talk about AI and Spotify and all that stuff that's come in now, and it's true. It's dramatically affected what we can earn as artists. And once upon a time, you used to make money from your CDs and the music that you made. Now it's all just down purely to what you can sell as merchandise, as a T-shirt or a hat or a cap, and the live performance. And so the live performance is becoming, again, important to the punter, the listeners. And so that's the trick, is to get back on that road.
Yeah. But there used to be a lot more venues, like in the pubs and things back then. They seem to have gone. When I was a kid, there were all bands playing in pubs and other places.
It was a perfect storm there back in the late 90s and the zeros, you know. It was drink driving came in, laws, non-smoking came in. Yeah. The pokies were allowed to go into the pubs, which took a lot of the band rooms. We had the responsible service of alcohol. We had security having to be placed on every single door, so that had to be paid through the drinks, and so the drink prices went up. Everything happened at the same time, and then with the advent of kind of Spotify coming into it, well, that just stripped everybody from making any bucks whatsoever from their investment into making an album.
Oh, you were speaking of selling merchandise. Ed Sheeran's selling bootloads of truckloads out there. He's been here for 3 nights, 70,000 a night, and selling truckloads. They sell everything. Tay Tay sells perfume and you name it. You name it. On the road again. Dr. Mark knows about sharks. We were talking about sharks, and we've had horrendous shark attacks and things in the last 4 or 5 weeks here in New South Wales, but they're everywhere. Sharks are everywhere. You go out off the coast routinely, don't you, in your little tinny?
Yeah.
Oh, and I'm not coming, so don't ask me. Don't
ask
me. I
won't ask again. The kingfish are around at the moment. They're everywhere. And they're the whitefish and sushi, so they're quite valuable. You should come out with me. Look, I've got a friend who's who does the drum lines in Sydney. And I was talking about the other day, George. I said, what's going on with these bull sharks? He said, off the beaches, they don't see them. They're estuary sharks. He said, we get plenty of great whites and plenty of tigers off our beaches, which they sort out. But the bull sharks are in the estuaries, Sydney Harbour, Pittwater, Botany Bay, because they hang there and they wait for the bait to come down and the prawns in the big washes and things. But interesting story. There is a type of bull shark which is probably the most dangerous on the planet, called a white-tip Oceanic whaler, only hang right outside. And when the U.S. Indianapolis got bombed, got torpedoed, the last one of the war, 1,000 men were killed by this thing. And I've seen them out in the ocean, deep off, way off the coast. They're very bad sharks. Whenever they're there, you certainly don't get in the water.
But sometimes, well, they, off the Indianapolis, they had no option, did they? They were sunk and they were all in the water for days and days, weren't they?
Yeah, and these sharks just picked them off. Mm. It wasn't the tigers or the whites, it was these things, the type of bull shark.
No, and as I've said, when I grew up, you don't swim outside the net, you know. I lived near a river, so we went down the river and swam, but there was in an enclosure. And nobody ever swam outside because it's like all the lessons that we used to learn in your grandparents, like, you know, the bushfire, you know, burn or be burnt, meaning burn around your house and stuff and then you won't be burnt in a bushfire. Those lessons seem to be lost on people. And the same with sharks swimming in the – you would never swim in the Georges River or the Hawkesbury River or in the Sydney Harbour or Port Phillip Bay. Well, you shouldn't do if you've got any sense about you, but – you know, I've seen people just swimming around the harbour, and why?
You're talking to the wrong bloke here. I love my surfing, like, a lot. Yeah. And the thing is, you just can't even put it in your mindset. You know, I just was down around South Australia and southwestern Australia, and there are some very lonely waves over there, and there's some amazing waves. But you're looking at it, and you're looking at the one other bloke next to you. Are you going out? Well, are you going out? You know, it's 50-50 then, isn't it? But
at least you're on a little boat of sorts, aren't you? Yeah. I mean,
well, yeah, if you're in a boat, that's okay. But when your legs are dangling off the side of your boat, that's a different thing, isn't it? But look, you can't, in my opinion, you can't let it enter your head. You know, it's still the most dangerous creature on the planet. What's the horse? You know, that kills more people on the planet than a shark, but we don't have that fear factor around a horse.
No, but other surfers have said that to me in the mornings when they've rung here, and they say I'm surfing at, you know, Cactus Beach or something, and I say
Cactus,
and I say oh, what about the Noahs? He says, oh, you don't think about it.
You don't think about it. You don't. And you can't, and I won't allow myself to now even. It's one of those things where you just go, oh, and you know they're there.
I've seen a couple of great whites swimming. One was 4 metres, and I tell you, they are so big and so wide. If they if they came towards you, you'd faint before, I think, before they got to you. They are frightening creatures.
Dr. Mark, you were saying?
My mum used to make pikelets, which I was partial to as well.
Yeah, very nice.
Rather than pancakes.
Very nice. Now, I'm talking this morning with Dr. Mark Joseph and Luke O'Shea. Dr. Mark, you'd been thinking about things and you had a little statement you wanted to make about life and that we're living at the moment.
And the kids as well. Yeah, that's right. Look, Macca, I really yearn for the old days of the Menzies era. Although back then, the other side of Curtin and Chifley, they all had the same ethos and the results were the same. That meant full employment, no national debt. And now only apparently 30% of us pay tax and 55% of us on welfare. We have a national debt of over $1 trillion and an annual payment of $60 billion per year the government has to pay. Surely this can't go on. I remember the country town I grew up in had multiple industries and a bustling main street and everybody could afford a house. Now the industries are gone. The main street's full of ghostly empty shops. We used to make the cars here, the white goods, the clothes. We had a woolen mills in the old town which made all the blankets of superb quality. In fact, it closed in the 80s, but I've still got a couple. And I wonder what the kids are going to do, especially with AI and small and small business, which is a spiralling downturn and a never-ending living crisis. So I think these are very worrying times.
They are. And I'll bring Luke in, Luke O'Shea, because Luke, as well as being a musician, travelling around and spending his time, it was a lovely song, by the way. He works in school. You've been working in schools with kids and all sorts of ways. And both Luke and I have a little an acquaintance who's decided he doesn't want to go to school. And he's about 13 or I think he's 14. So is that sort of a common thing, Luke? What's happening with kids in schools now with, you know, they've got e-bikes so they can go anywhere, can't they?
Yeah.
And
that's
phones?
That's just the start. What we have now is a society that hasn't had the chance or the education, the learning how to find stillness, mindfulness, and how to escape the noise of the mind. And that's our society. We've just been inundated with stimulation. Particularly over the last, say, 15 to 20 years, we've had everything come in. And our generation remembers what it was like just to have one telephone, you know, and you knew everybody. And, hey, gum, Mrs. Duffy, you good? How's your son? Yeah, good. How's the knee? My mum's, yeah, she's good. And so can I speak to Billy? And you'd have to go through that process or waiting for your mate at the steps on the town hall. You waited and you didn't have a device in your pocket that kind of linked you into the whole of the world and everything that you don't have. You're just exposed to everything that everybody else has got and therefore, you know, all want is suffering. So these kids are now, and us as society, is just in a perpetual state of want. And that perpetual state of want, as all the great prophets of the world have told us, is the main cause of suffering in our world. It's just, I've got to keep up with the Joneses, and this desire for more and more and more has put us into a tailspin. And what we have is this generation of kids coming through that haven't feared. We learnt through fear our generations, you know, corporal punishment. You stepped out of line, you got a kick in the butt, or you got strapped across the hands. But a lot of that led to a bit of trauma as well, because you put that in the hands of a psychopath. We can all remember a teacher that belted us for some ridiculous reason. We still carry that anger. And so that had to be taken out of the education system somehow, but we also are trying to rationalise with people whose brains aren't ready to be rationalised with. And so we're in this kind of no man's land where we're trying to navigate through this technology that's coming at such a rapid rate that the teachers are burnt out because we're so spent with time. Like, there's only so many hours in a day and we've still got the same curriculum that we've been carrying on from the 50s and the 60s and 70s into a world which is that technology is just coming in at such a pace that we don't even know how to use it ourselves, let alone teach it to others. And so what you're seeing is disengagement on a huge level where these kids have got great BS detectors. You know, they always have had, and they can see straight through us just going, this is important, this is important, this is important, because everything's important. And the thing is, their brains are spinning at such a frequency, this gamma beta frequency, they don't even know how to drop it down into that natural alpha kind of delta frequency, which is where we recharge and we dream and we create. That's the realm where we can slow ourselves down. But the greatest thing that we should be trying to teach in a school is how to find stillness. space and then approach your exam from that space of calm. You know, you look at the great sportsmen now, that's becoming paramount to their game where, you know, they'll take a deep breath before they take that conversion, they'll get themselves still, and we're missing that in our education system. We're just bombarding with more and more and more, and so these kids are just going, you know what? No. And you can't argue with that because you're going, well, you've got to go to school, you got to get, and they're going, well, why do I? AI is coming in at such a rate. All these occupations and jobs are coming in that you're not training me for. You're just sticking to an old template that's going to maybe get me a trade down the road, but there's new avenues. I remember hearing a quote years ago when I was at school where 50% of the jobs that we'll be doing haven't been invented yet. And I'm pretty sure that that quote's still relevant to today. Think of all the new occupations that have come into play that we had no idea could even imagine would be there. And that's what these kids are kind of doing now. They're just saying, well, I'm not going there. And the thing is, we can't threaten them. We can't put a kick, you know, boot in their butt, you know. So they're just not turning up to school. And the parents are frustrated and they're angry, and because this is uncharted waters, and we all are, because...
And what can you do? What do you do as a parent?
Well, you're still the parent, you know, and this is the thing. You still control the purse strings that buys them a damn e-bike. So, you know, it's tough love. You take it away. You turn the internet off in the whole house. You don't, you know, everyone's got, they've got to have a phone. That's just how they do it. A lot of their stuff is done on school. And this is the frustrating part as a parent and as a teacher, because when you're reliant on a computer device, it's easy to hide everything. It's easy to compute. Have you done your homework? Yeah, it's just there. Where's your assignment? Well, I've already submitted it. You know, where is it? Well, it's on here. And, you know, it's a punish to get your kid to show you the homework, where once upon a time it was opening a page. And so this is very important to me, Maggie. Like, I had a meeting with the heads of the Sydney Catholic school system here not long ago about how we're failing the kids and the teachers in not kind of focusing on the well-being of these students and teachers, because they're burning out. I think the statistics that they just released from their own system was 1 in 4 kids are clinically diagnosed with depression. That means they're seeing somebody to help them get through this Himalayas of just stuff that lays before them. You know, the media's bombarding them about global warming and there's Trumps and there's all this horrible kind of news coming at them at a million miles an hour. They go, well, I don't want any of that stuff. So they shut down. And so the well-being should be the number one thing in our education system. Find stillness, learn how to control that mind of yours. You're not your thought patterns. And then we can start dealing with curriculum that we need to strip right back and just get them up to date with what they really need to in order to get by as a human being.
I think, go on, Dr.
Look, Mark. I think you're exactly right. Their minds are so overloaded, and then with the phones and the computers, push-button technology, they want instant gratification. Life's not like that. Like, all of us have had an apprenticeship, and they won't stand for that. And that's the problem. Life takes time, experience, and learning. You can't get that with instant gratification, pushing a button on your phone.
I think, I know school has changed since we went to school, but I'm not sure it's changed enough. I mean, I remember talking to Luke before, and the stuff you learn at school, really, the thing I remember at school was sausage rolls and cream buns and stuff, because it was a whole new world. But the only subject really that I was interested in was French, because it was new and I could speak French, and I love French. But that's about all I took out of school, you know, really. And it seems to me that. What do you say to a 13 or 14 year old who's had no? You're only 13 or 14. I can't remember back to being 13 or 14, but I don't think I knew. I know nothing now, but I knew nothing then. You don't know anything. You have got no experience of life or love or anything like that.
You're not supposed to.
No,
you know? That's the thing. Like, you're doubling in size. This is the thing. Like, the only other time we double in size is from 0 to 4, and all we expect from that infant there is to eat, sleep and poop, you know. And that's the same thing. You're doubling in size from about the ages of 12 through to about 16, 17. So the boys that I teach and the kids, they're just not, their brain's not developed yet. They're doubling. All they want to do is sit, eat, sleep and poop, you know what I mean? And they also throw into that the chemistry of hormones kicking in and that confusion. But we could deal with it because we had a bit of space around us. Add to that now the pressures of social media and all the other stimulation that they have coming at them, and their brains are being wired differently to get that dopamine hit every 5 seconds with that flick of the thumb.
Is that what was the stats that made government say, yeah, before 16 you can't have your mobile phone? Is that what were the stats that they were looking at? They must be scary.
Well, they are, particularly with the young females, you know, that comparison thing that comes in with the social media, the body shaming.
Mm. The bullying.
It is phenomenal, and it's just it's, you know, kids are magnificent, but kids are cruel in ways as well. So they don't understand how words can cut and how bullying can deeply scar, and trauma comes into it. But that's always been the way since Adam was a boy, except we now have more platforms in order to do it on a 24/7 basis. Mm. And so that's where, as I said, as society, you know, we are facing this new technology that's coming at such a rate that we have to learn how to just control it and turn it off. And like that song mentioned, the art of letting go. We just have to learn how to put it down, turn it off, and just breathe.
I don't know, because you're in teaching. Are phones banned at school? Do you have to hand your phone in or something like that, or what's the deal?
It's very hard to police because sometimes you're requiring the students there to take photos of the work that's on the board so they can later on study it down the track, or like if they're recording or if they're doing an artwork, they need to kind of utilise their phones. So their phones are actually being incorporated into the curriculum to a large degree, as are the laptops. You have stage 4, which is year 7 and 8, stage 5, 9 and 10, and 6 is year 11 and 12. So I truly believe that those computers, which were, and this was all an experiment. These kids were always going to be the guinea pigs. But take it out of stage 4. They've still got to learn how to read and write. Mm. And like, we're still assessing these kids in year 12 with 3-hour exams that go for days and days and days. So you need to develop that fitness, that writing fitness. And as I said, these kids come to us through primary school, and some of them can't even spell their name where it's legible.
Well, they said that, you know, we read that 5-10 years ago, but kids at uni couldn't write spelling was terrible, and they couldn't write a composition or whatever. And then you read the things about AI, and kids are at uni, and they're, I need an essay about, the causes and effect of, you know, supply and demand and stuff, and boom, AI will do it now that it comes, and it's all gone to hell in a handbasket. But the thing is, you've got these little young kids that seem they're lost. They don't know what to do. And as Luke says, the teachers are, you know, a teacher, you know, and it's like your thing when COVID happened. Doctors seem to me to be saying, "Oh, I'm getting out of here. This is too. I didn't sign up for this. I didn't sign up to have a shower every day and put on this suit and all that sort of." the whole thing changed, and a teacher's not only got to teach like they used to, but they're dealing with all this AI stuff and all the kids and all the as Luke says, the depression and all that sort of stuff and psychology, and the schools are a little psychological areas now, aren't they? As much as teaching, you know, 4-4s are 16. Are they still? Yeah, I think they are. But they've got they're doing that whole psychological thing and worrying about, I mean, it's a minefield, really.
It really is. And look, I'm the eternal optimist. I think we can always, if their problem arises, we have the ways of beating it, you know, and addressing it. And so I think the pain has to build up to such a degree that we have to do something. And this is where we're at. It's becoming a breaking point where the education system has to radically change and incorporate well-being. And I know it's a buzzword, but that well-being and that mindfulness has to come in as an important subject as mathematics or English, religion in other schools. You know, it's paramount to education. It's paramount to our society. And
especially now with what's happened. I mean, at one time we just went to school and we learnt the 3 hours and it was a bit boring and, you know, you got something out of it. But we're in a whole new world now, aren't we? Are we really?
We are. And it's not to be feared. It's here to stay. AI is here to stay. And these are incredible tools. And so you say, okay, what are ways that we can start incorporating this so that it serves us as opposed to us fearing it?
But it makes you wonder with kids who use AI for their essays and have no idea what to do, when they get their degree and they get out and they've got to use it, they'll be underdone because they haven't studied it. Yeah. AI's done it for them.
Yeah, look, it's it's here. Yeah. So you just go, righto, well, you know, you got It's here. That's all I can say. Yeah. And the kids have to learn how to use it. And there's certain things that we just don't know what's ahead of us.
The young bloke that I was talking about that you sort of know too, Luke, is I don't think he's been engaged with school for 4 or 5 years, and now he's in year 8 or 9 or whatever he's in. And so it's no good sending him back to school because he's it seems to me, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure because you can't talk to these kids, won't talk to you, you know. Mm-hmm. That he's behind by 4 or 5 years. And you know what it's like if you're in a class where everyone knows the answer except you do, and you're stupid and all that sort of stuff, and people don't talk to you because you're not able to connect with them because you don't know. And But when I look back on school, and I didn't mind going to school, and as I said, tuck shops were great. I thought, God, I don't have to, mum's cooking, I could look at all this, wow. But That was you met people, and it was an experience. Yeah. But you weren't on your phone all the time. You were actually dealing with kids in the playground, and kids who were bullying, and kids who were nice, and kids whatever. Mm. So that was the whole thing that was going on at school. But I look back and I think, well, practical things. You should, you know, if I went back to school, I'd do biology, which I didn't do, and maybe geology, but also things, practical things like, you know, the economy and banking and all those sort of things, and cooking. I mean, cooking, my God, we think, oh, cooking, this is for the girls, but cooking's just, you know, do those practical things at school that kids who haven't been engaged with, you know, and don't know about algebra or don't care about it or don't want to learn Indonesian. But there's so many things to do in life, and you might click on something on music and stuff like that, and they might just click on something and say, that's what I want to do, I want to collect stamps, or whatever, you know what I mean? And just, that's what school should be about, you know, just, you know, we've all, you know, you could talk to Dr. Mark, who's got a medical degree, and Luke is teaching, and me has done nothing, but
that's not true.
The things at school, you know, it's pretty dagging. You think, ancient history again. God help me, yeah. Double mast. Oh God. There's other opportunities, Luke, isn't there?
There are, and look, I love the occupation. I think teaching is a beautiful vocation, and the schools are still magnificent places because teachers are incredible people. They really are, and the problem is with teachers are they're teacher pleasers. And so people keep bringing in stuff, say, you want to do this? And go, yeah, I'll do it. Everyone's doing it, and then we just keep adding more stuff to the curriculum, which needs to be stripped right back. And so with these kids, they do get the chance to try everything. And people out there listening now, don't fear. The schools are still great places for the majority of people. Like, these kids enter, they learn, they socialise, they learn integral skills about, you know, it's not just about learning the 3 R's, it's learning how to deal with that teacher that they don't get on with, that, or dealing with that kid that they might.
And the education of the playground.
Yeah, exactly right. It's a multifaceted area of education, and it's integral to us. But what we do have to do is start looking out and making it a little bit easier for our teachers, because I think the last statistic was 67% of them are looking for a way out because they're so burnt out and disenchanted with it as well.
Is that the same with doctors, Dr. Mo?
I think they have finite working hours now, different than when I grew up, which is good. It's better for your psyche and you don't get so tired, I suppose. But the problem is you don't get the experience. We did 1 in 2 or 1 in 3 nights on call, back to work the next day. And the experience you got was immense, and that really helps when you get out and you're on your own. Mm-hmm. Whereas we often say that they're probably getting a quarter of the experience we do, but this is the way of the world. Look, I remember when computers came 30 years ago, and AI is even worse now, they said, oh, this does the work of 10 people. What are the other 9 going to do? Sit at home and do nothing and get the dole. This is the problem. I spent a year in India. I travel around, and I remember there everyone had a little job. Dobie wallers, they wash clothes. Box wallers, they got you a seat on the train. If they didn't have those little jobs, they'd go to the wall. Mm. There's no dole there. I'm not sure how much food they got handed out by the government, but that's the problem. And I see that as a huge problem.
And I think practical things at school. If you come out of school and you can do something practical like woodwork.
Yeah.
There was woodwork and tech drawing and metalwork at our school. I didn't do them all, but I did some of them. But they're things that you can pick up, or you might find out you like it, you know. And as Luke says, the teachers are very important because you bond with some teachers, you like them. I mean, it's a little bloke bonded with you. But Liz asks, do you think ethics would be a valuable subject to be taught in all schools? I don't know. What do you both think?
Ethics.
I don't think kids wouldn't relate to it, would they?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, here's a big thing. You have parents, and parents are responsible for teaching a lot of their things to their kids. I think just don't hand it over to the schools to teach them ethics and morals.
Yeah, exactly.
It has to come from home, and this is a big thing.
That's what I've always thought about. You know, I sometimes hear ethics professors or whatever from university and stuff, and I think, well, that's what you learnt at home, really. You can't throw everything onto the school. No. You've got to learn that. You know, schools are picking up all the detritus of bad homes, aren't they? Really?
Well, it's just so our society's changed, as we mentioned before, whereby both parents are absolutely skint. You know, they've run out of time because they're so time poor for providing for the e-bikes and the computers and the iPhones and the new designer clothes that they've got to give these kids now. And so everyone's working and the mortgages are so high, and so the stress levels at the home, and the parents are dealing with the social media and the Netflix and everything else and the high points of stimulation, and they're not recharging and they're burning out. And so the kids are feeling off that fear of the frustration that the parents have got. And so the kids take that with them and they internalize it. And so we're dealing with a perfect storm.
And they don't want to wait. They will not wait for education, and it takes time. I had a cousin who sold a big advertising business. He told me he'd get Gen XYZs come in and say, yeah, they'd want to sit in his chair, the CEO's chair. He said, no, you go make the coffee for 2 years and we'll talk about it. It's gone. That's the end of that.
Yeah, look, as I said, I'm optimistic. I think we're still on track, kids. So it's one of these things where we just have to look at the problems that are facing us and then say, what's the smartest way through it? And I think as a society, we just learn to need to slow ourselves down in a deliberate, disciplined way and then start taking stock and making that a prime focus.
But then again, you've got the tiger countries. You've got China and India, where the kids are really quiet. They study. They've got 2 degrees by the time they're 25. And they've got and our kids have got to compete with those. And you're telling them the only way to do that is to study.
Well,
they do a lot of the world's work, these kids. They're really bright, these kids, and
yeah, look,
big work ethic.
Our kids are bright, and our kids have got magnificent work ethics as well, but we're also coming from a culture which is completely different. You know, you've got beer vending machines in Japan, for God's sake, and no one will touch it until they're 18. You tell me how a beer vending machine would go in our streets here. You know, it's a different mindset. It's a different culture. And so we can't compare ourselves to other cultures. And we've got to just deal with what we've got here. And I'm all for this generation coming through. I think they're incredible and they're adapting to the best of their ability. But as we as parents and the people who are leading the charge, we're the ones that are lost, and we're the ones that need to dictate how we want to approach the future with them.
And more discipline to kids, do you think? I don't mean giving them the cane, but
it's such
a good talking to the parents and a good talking to the kids.
Well, I came through the system of corporal punishment and was belted in and made to say thank you afterwards, and I'm serious. And like, so you carry that element, but you also carry that understanding that you learnt through fear, and learning through fear changes the classroom and it changes the home life. And we've all come out okay, so we go, well, it worked for me. But these kids aren't learning through fear. They're learning through what we call rational thinking, you know, or like, what's the restorative justice is the way. Do you see how your actions are affecting the rest of the class, your doctor? You know, and that's okay. But when you're dealing with a baby who's having a tantrum, you go, look, smack on the butt, don't you? But then it's like, again, it's like you can't control the crazy person who takes the slap too far, or the teacher that goes berserk in a classroom. So a general must come across, and we must, for the long-term gain, just keep relying on that, trying to relating to them as a human being without that fear factor. And that's a challenge, and it's a slow road, but it's less traumatic in the long run.
Luke, thank you very much. And Dr. Mark, thank you very much too. We'll have a little music and go up to the news. It's been heavy, but I think there's probably a lot of parents out there who are facing this problem, with, especially with kids who are about 12 to 15 to 16 and stuff like that. It's a tough time for them, isn't it?
Yeah, it goes across the spectrum. Doesn't matter what part of society you're in, it's all the way across these problems.
Yeah, it's going all the way up to the top with real estate now, with the, you know, kids moving back and staying in the house a lot longer than they should be.
Yeah, very true.
And that's a biggie.
G'day, this is Macca.
Hi, Macca.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
What's your name?
My name is Lainey.
Oh, g'day, Lainey. Yep.
Absolutely loving your live interview and Luke O'Shea's songs too, and love your show anyway.
Thank you.
It's just great. Thank you. I called in as I feel a little bit like Luke's a spirit brother from a different mother.
Sister.
Hey, buddy. Or should I say butter? I've followed a very similar trajectory in being a professional musician for 30-plus years in Adelaide. Mm. I actually, as much as I love this hometown, we all deserve a medal, any of us that are doing any gigs here in Adelaide, especially these days,
yeah.
Just with the way of the world. And like Luke, I learnt very quick smart in about 1995 that if I want to survive as a musician in Adelaide, I am best to look into a teaching vocation. And the thing that really has made my ears prick up this morning listening to your show and listening to Luke's stories and beautiful songs is I have seen such a palpable change teaching singing one-on-one over these 30, I think I'm into my 31st year of that.
Mm.
And the kids are beautiful. I love them and I love working with them. And I'm very blessed to work at a music school here in Adelaide. The instant gratification that Luke was, and I didn't quite catch the doctor's name, so I do apologise.
I've been listening to Dr. Mark Joseph, he's here?
Yes. Sorry, Dr. Mark. I haven't had coffee yet, and my brain's a bit as your father from my solo gig last night, so sorry. But the thing that I've noticed is that really the teachers are, I mean, gosh, I could talk for hours about music and teachers and live gigs. The thing I will say is that I have noticed that teachers are burning out because we're basically parenting, because the parents are trying to keep up with the e-bikes and the, you know, the latest and greatest iPhone and, you know, the new shoes and the blah, 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 blah. And the kids are beautiful. They don't know any different, really. This is the generation that they're being brought up in, whereas I'm a Gen Xer. And I've had to do my fair share of parenting with kids that are playing the piano while I'm trying to talk to them. And I say, excuse me, would you like me to do that while you're trying to sing your song or tell me about your day or whatever? So there's a couple of things that really have spoken to me through Luke's songs, through your interview, through what Dr. Mark's been talking about, and that is that the disconnect that we all now have not much choice but to live with is impacting not only our children, it's impacting our live music industry, and this sweep of having to embrace digital everything. Oh, don't even get me started. Just actually, I know that technology is unavoidable, but I yearn for those days that Luke was singing about in his songs, because I was lucky enough to experience them. And I've often said I would not trade my childhood for anything in the world. Excuse me. Sorry, I've got man voice for my gig last night. I'm croaky.
Lainey, you need that coffee.
Oh, mate, I so do, Macca. I was just so inspired to ring.
Well, that's
and
good.
Thank you. Thank yourself. Thank Dr. Mark and thank Luke for talking about something that should be shouted, but should be being shouted from the mountaintops. But everyone's so bloody busy and trying desperately to keep their mortgages.
Yeah, and trying to cope. You can't, you know, you're in the middle of something, aren't you? It's like, you know, you watch your city grow, you're in the middle of it and you don't notice it, and someone else comes there and says, my God, what's happened to Sydney? Or what's happened to Melbourne? You know, it's just, so you're in the middle of it and you don't notice it, you know? It's
Very much so. It's that frog in the boiling water scenario, isn't it?
Yeah.
But we do, I think that's the thing. These kids have been in the boiling water, and so they're not realising they're boiling to death, but we are the frog that's jumped into it, and we remember what it was like outside that boiling water. So it's up to us to say, hey, let's turn this thing off.
Yeah. Good on you, Lainey. Absolutely. Great to talk to you.
Thanks so much.
Good on you, Lainey. Cheers,
Dr.
mate.
Mark, and thank you so much, Luke.
Oh, hey, listen, and we'll hope to catch up and do a gig together in Adelaide one day.
Oh, I would love that, and I am definitely seeking out your albums, my friend. Thank you for being an absolute legend.
Thanks,
and
Angela.
Speaking on behalf of us Adelaidean musicians that are desperately trying to keep some gigs.
I'll see you soon.
Good on you.
Thanks, mate.
Bye.
Thanks so much.
There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at macatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.